If you are listening to this recording, just know go ahead and start skipping ahead a few minutes at a time until you start hearing me get started talking about the topic, which is a couple of different things unrelated. One is Twitter 2FA or two-factor authentication, which I wanted to specifically talk about that because they just announced people that pay for Twitter Blue can use the SMS authentication. I have some thoughts on that. And then also recently Cardano just went through an upgrade to support some encryption algorithms, and I want to talk about that and the encryption algorithms. So I'll get started on that here shortly. I'm just going to go on mute for the moment, so skip ahead a few minutes at a time if you're listening to the recording, and I'll get started here shortly. Okay, if you're listening to the recording and taking my advice, skipping a few minutes ahead at a time, we're about 9 minutes in, and I will get started here in just a moment. Okay, so I will get started. The first thing I would like to talk about is, oh, hey, Gold Rush, I want to invite you up and I will get started. I'm actually just getting started here. Yeah. Twitter Spaces is being a pain in the ass for me today. Yeah, I don't know if you, I invited you up, but yeah, I tried taking a little bit of your advice. I'm not very, still trying to come to terms with putting something catchy in here, but I just actually officially started scheduling all my spaces every Sunday now for 9:30. So hopefully I'll be able to spread the word on that and be consistent like that and get more people in here. I wasn't sure how my Sunday today was going to go, so I could only schedule this like an hour in advance, which is not the best idea for getting people in here. But yeah. So if I don't really have anybody join, I'm just going to spend a little bit of time talking about a couple of different topics on my own here and let you hop up. If you don't mind, man, if you can reshare this thing out and yeah, I think I'm going to post this on my website too. I don't have my I post all the spaces on there, but I don't post the schedule on there. But now that instead, I was originally trying to change a time every week to compensate for other time zones, but I think I just need to pick a time every week and be consistent. So I pick 9:30 Eastern every Sunday. But yeah, so there were a couple of things, not as entertaining as contingent staking. So I'm not everybody's all talking about that all week long. But I'm not really one to get involved in that until I know everything there is to know. But yeah, so I saw that Twitter, there was some news the other day that Twitter was allowing people that pay for, I don't know what you call it, Twitter Pro or something, but where you get the blue check mark, and along with that, you'll now be able to use SMS or text messaging for two-factor authentication. And I saw a lot of people worried about that because, or they're concerned with that being, why would Twitter want to charge to give people an option to improve their security? Which, in my opinion, is kind of crazy. I really do not understand the reasoning why you would add that to a paid feature to allow someone to increase your security on your platform. That should always, 100% of the time, be free. But what I was, I think I'm probably going to make a, because I started my, I'm not sure if you know this, right? But I've been spending a lot of time on my YouTube channel because I think a lot of people like that method of receiving content. So, if you haven't seen my YouTube, man, I would appreciate if you went and checked it out. It's just if you just go to youtube.com/@epochsec, you'll find me. But or you can find the link on my Twitter page. But anyway. I think a lot of people don't realize you could do two-factor authentication on Twitter without that blue check mark and paying for their paid service. As a matter of fact, you can use a software authenticator or a hardware authenticator. So you can use, I think, Google Authenticator, or if you have a YubiKey, like a physical UBC or UBSC. Or USB, oh my gosh. USB-C or regular USB YubiKey authenticator or hardware authenticator, you can use that or Google Authenticator, right? And honestly, those methods are more secure than getting one-time passcodes in SMS or text message anyway. So in my opinion, the fact that they're really charging for a less secure way of, or less preferred way of using two-factor authentication. So that's even more bizarre to me. But yeah, I just want to let people know that, I actually just ordered a YubiKey that I can use for testing. So I'm probably going to do like a shorts YouTube video tomorrow. Oh, hey, hellos. Welcome to the base. Hello, is that, I don't really have a lot of people in here because I was really poor yet again this week at scheduling this. I have officially started deciding to stick to a scheduled time every single week, and that's 9:30 Eastern or 2:30 UTC every Sunday. So going forward, if you want to join any of my spaces, it'll be different topics every week, and they'll be at 2:30 UTC every single Sunday. I also do YouTube videos if you weren't here for me babbling on to Gold Rush about that. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have a lot of people in here because, again, I was not good at scheduling this, so I will allow you to jump up if you want to bring anything up. Welcome, welcome. I think you did hop up, or maybe you didn't. Yeah, there you are. There you are. Hellos, how are you?
Hey man, how's it going? Just
Pretty good. How are you
I'm
doing?
doing good. So I was just kind of just browsing the spaces and I saw this one that it was
Yeah.
about Cardano. I was like, I'm gonna see what's going on, man. Like, I mean, it
Yeah.
seems kind of
Yeah.
interesting. I'm just looking at your profile and like, well, I have no idea what like you usually talk about, but seems like you got some
Yeah,
interesting
sure.
like standpoint and everything.
Yeah, I'm glad to give you, if you want to entertain me for 2 minutes, I will gladly give you the rundown. So I have a bad habit of repeating myself, so I've probably said it about four times now. But I was really bad at over the last couple month or so. I've been really bad at scheduling my Twitter spaces, so I haven't been getting a lot of people in here. Because I usually schedule it like an hour beforehand, and it's usually at a time when people are there's some other insane, crazy Twitter space going on. But like I said, I am scheduling these going forward at 9:30 Eastern every week. But anyway, the 2 minute scoop here is I'm heavily involved in Cardano. I've probably been in the Cardano community for 2.5 years now. I work for a stake pool operator, Bloom. I've worked for CNFT tools. I've done all sorts of stuff working on the, testing EVM stuff for IOG or maybe testing stuff for Indigo. And I'm also, what I've also done since last November is I've started a Cardano funded project, if you're familiar with Catalyst. But anyway, it's funded. And what it is I've been in cybersecurity for 13 years. So I do Twitter spaces. I do YouTube videos. Matter of fact, my other account on here right now is Holy Macaroni. That's my main account. So if you didn't did want to get any more stuff, like that's where I do most of my communication from, right? But anyway, getting back on track, I have this cybersecurity project to use my expertise to help individuals or teams or anything in the Cardano space specifically. I've also helped other people in the broader community, crypto community as well, because, you know, if people need help there, you know, my main goal is helping people be more safe and secure. But the so anyway, that's kind of my spiel, right? So until from all the way through the end of October this year, I have a funded project where every week I spend a certain amount of time helping individuals like you or different teams building projects in the crypto space that may not have the funding or allocations to have a dedicated security person, things like that, right? And in this specific space, I mentioned Cardano because Cardano just went through before I go through the Cardano part here, if you don't mind me asking, that way I know kind of where to start and how to describe this. What is your familiarity in the Cardano space?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I've definitely been involved in Cardano since like a year now. Like, okay. I'm not much into like knowing all the security stuff and all that, but I am kind of familiar with the ecosystem, but I've never gotten in depth. Like, I'm pretty sure you got like a lot of info on that, but mm-hmm. like right now when you mentioned about the catalyst, I am familiar with that and pretty okay. much like stuff that Cardano has been developing, but I've never gotten much into it. But like, I am always like willing to learn and curious about all those things, you know?
Yeah, sure. Okay, that sounds good. Cool. Before I get into that part, yeah, I'm, like I said, I've been in Cardano for a while, but I am rather familiar with a lot of the other popular chains as well, because I think they all have a lot of cool value to them, right? And they all kind of do they all each have their own one little thing that I really like, right? But anyway, so Cardano on Valentine's Day, actually, so I guess they technically renamed the recent upgrade to the Valentine update. But anyway, what it was they had a protocol update to support other encryption algorithms. So before I get into exactly what they did, I wanted to actually spend a few minutes talking about encryption algorithms from a hopefully non-technical perspective, because I think a lot of people don't, they understand blockchain, but I don't think they understand the history of some of the things that blockchain technology uses. So all these encryption algorithms that the blockchain uses falls under something called SECP. So Standards for Efficient Cryptography, right? So much longer than 20 years ago, but really about 20 years ago is when it started really ramping up, was the Standards for Efficient Cryptography. And what comes in that, right, are a bunch of different algorithms, right? Complicated mathematical elliptical curve algorithms to create these keys, right, to authenticate. So under the SECP umbrella, you have things like, and I'll mention these terms, I wouldn't worry about what they mean too much, but just know that there are a lot of options out there. So one popular one is called RSA, right? And another one is, you know, there are a couple of other ones. You have ED25519, then you have ECDSA, then EDDSA, and then you also have something called Schnorr, right? And really what these are, right, is, again, they're encryption algorithms designed to create a private key and a public key, right? That's called asymmetric encryption. So what's happening there is, if I use one of those words I just said to generate me some encryption keys, it's going to create me a private key and then an associated public key. Now, what you do with that is you keep your private key to yourself, right? And you take that public key and you put it somewhere else. Now, when you try to get to that thing, whether you try to log into something or whether you try to access a remote system or whether you're trying to secure the code you're developing, or whether you're trying to create some API keys, or whatever you are trying. If I'm trying to SSH into another computer, whether I'm on Windows or Linux, you have these encryption keys, right? So that you have that public key on that remote thing, and it says, okay, so from my host computer, it's going to say, okay, you want to use this private key. Okay, I'm going to look at that public key on that other thing, and I'm going to compare them. If that does match up, then it'll allow you to authenticate. Now, blockchains are also using these encryption algorithms as well for all the different things you're doing in the blockchain, right? So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, while blockchain technology is really creating something really new and revolutionary, they're all also really using encryption standards that have been around for decades, right? That's because these encryption algorithms are really secure and really do work. Now, for the Cardano upgrade that happened 5 days ago, now Cardano specifically uses ED25519, which is a combination of two different things, right? I'm not going to get into that, but won't, you know, but there's two encryption things that they're using that comes up with ED25519. I personally also use ED25519 when I want to create my private key and public key. For when I want to SSH for my Linux computer to my Windows computer, or if I want to remote from my Windows to my Linux computer, or if I want to remote from my Linux computer to a Linux server I'm using, right? So I guess what I'm getting across is trying to relate the usability of these encryption algorithms. Now, like I said, Cardano uses ED25519. Now, Bitcoin and Ethereum, I don't have my notes in front of me right now, but I think that they use ECDSA. Now, something like Polkadot, I believe, uses Schnorr. I probably need to look that up to be sure. Give me just a second here. Polkadot, Schnorr. Let me see here. Yeah, I think they do use that. Yeah. So all of these encryption algorithms are great. I mean, they're all pretty secure, or actually, they're really secure, right? But they all work in different ways. So what I'm saying, I guess the closing point on here is, while Cardano already uses a wonderful encryption algorithm, all they did was add support for these other encryption algorithms natively on the chain, right? So when developers are building different tools and applications and things, and they want to integrate these other encryption algorithms that other blockchains are using, it's a lot easier now for them to do it instead of creating workarounds and things like that, right? So I don't know if that was confusing or not, but I hope that helps you understand a little bit of what Cardano just did. And I really wanted to explain that because encryption does fall under the cybersecurity realm, and I do see articles out there that are kind of misleading as usual, right? But
Yeah, I mean, I do understand the main concept about encryption and all that, like how you're saying about two-factor authentication. I mean, I do use it for some accounts. I believe I use an external app though. It's called Authy, I think. And with that one, I mean, it gives me a code to 2FA my Discord or I don't know what else I have with 2FA, but I do understand that. So from what you're telling me is that pretty much with this upgrade, developers can build this sort of systems onto maybe a Cardano wallet or a platform or something like that.
Yeah, they'll be able to, cr yeah, exactly, right? They'll be able to develop things with integrations a lot easier, because now when they try to integrate something, and I'm not a code developer, right? But the best way I can explain it is they have to use workarounds to get to these integrations. Now, those encryption algorithms that other blockchains use are natively available on Cardano, so now it's easier for them to do that, right? Hey Kiwi, I saw you hopped up. Gold, I see you hopped up too, man. What's up,
Yeah,
y'all?
man. That's actually really good news. I had no idea that actually updated the encryption standard as well. So, multiple encryption methods, that's fantastic.
Awesome.
That also means I'm guessing that they will try and do the same with all the sidechains into the future from here forward, because they'll use essentially the same base as Cardano. They're just like EVM compatible chains. So you would think they would try and make as many encryption standards possible on the sidechain networks as well.
Yeah. Do you mean for like other blockchains, other different encryption algorithms being used, or just on their sidechains that they're creating, like Midnight, for example?
Well, yeah, the Cardano sidechains will be built specifically. So Mamba, Midnight, that sort of thing. It would just kind of make sense, I suppose, if they just take the tech that they've just built for the primary chain and stick it on all the sidechains as well. It's going to make a lot of happy developers.
Yeah, no kidding, right? It'll make the I'm sure these developers are pretty happy about that, right? Especially like somebody like DC Spark, you know. I'm sure they have to do workarounds all you know, cuz you know they have their sidechain as well, right? So or layer 2. I'm not sure if DC Spark calls it a layer 2 or sidechain. I completely forget. but yeah, you're right. It's just go ahead.
No, they call it a sidechain. It's like Polygon is to Ethereum, I suppose. It's not quite as closely linked as the IOG sidechains will be, but still pretty bloody close, isn't it?
Yeah, but I was, but to your point, I was really happy to see that they added support for ECDSA and Schnorr and all of that, right? And people don't, I guess, you know, for the average person, that you don't really need to know. For one, it's very difficult to understand how these encryption algorithms actually work. I would just say know that most of them are really good. I would say now if you're looking at encryption algorithms to secure your code or anything like that, if you're using something like RSA, don't use 2048, right? Because there has, in practice, they have proven that there is a potential for collisions. Now, that's another thing to mention, collisions, right? So this applies to hashing functions like SHA or MD5, stuff like that. But it also applies to encryption algorithms, to where what collision means is the potential for the creation of the exact same key in separate instances, right? But I would say that, you know, ED25519, ECDSA, Schnorr, all of that are, I don't think anybody has ever been able to, unless I've missed something, been able to create a collision there, right? But with RSA 2048, so what RSA is, it's another encryption algorithm, but the 2048 means the bit or the size of it, right? So I typically always use 4096 or above, right? Because those are, you know, in the security field, they, you know, that's a general recommended size to use for RSA. But you know, like ED25519, right? That is a really short key size, right? But the algorithm they're using for the elliptical curve is a lot more complicated, right? So it's a lot more random. But it's also cool because it's shorter, right? I think that's another reason why Cardano chose ED25519, because it's a lot, the reason, you know, what happens when it's a lot shorter, it's a lot faster too, right? To the human eye, it's negligible, but when you're running code and blockchains and stuff, it becomes a big deal, right? But yeah. Hey, Dirty Crypto, I see you jumped in, man. If you want to hop up, go ahead and request speaker. I'll bring you up. I don't have a lot of people in here right now. So, you know, if you want to hop up, there's plenty of room for you. But yeah.
You lose me on the details. I don't know encryption methods and so on very well at all, but I do know the importance of them. And like, I didn't realize that the difference in speed could be that important in at that level. But, you know, it kind of makes sense that it is. It's just not something I'd actually thought of before. So, yeah.
Yeah, because if you go, Kiwi, do you have a Linux system or Windows? It doesn't matter.
No. I'm Windows, and I'm not exactly a dev. I fuck around with Windows, a little bit of code here and there, but that's it.
Well, here's something fun on Windows. I'm sure you're familiar with PuTTY, right? So if you instead of just downloading PuTTY, if you go to the PuTTY website, download something called PuTTY Gen, G-E-N. And it's just a GUI. It's just an application you can run, and you say you can click a different radius radio button for ED25519 or RSA or whatever, and it'll create you your encryption key. I would say go check that out and look at the difference in sizes, because if you look at an RSA 4096 key, you'll see it's like 5 times as long as an ED25519 key, right? And like I said, right, to the human eye, right, that's a negligible difference in terms of speed, right? But when that thing's being used consistently, nonstop, repetitively on a blockchain that never stops, right, then I guess the speed factor adds up over time, right? Okay, so hellos or gold, do you guys have anything around that, or any questions or comments? Or
I didn't even realize I'd come up as speaker. It's nice to see everybody. I'm actually doing some chores and stuff. I'm just listening in. So
cool, man.
I'm learning a lot.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, I'll stop saying this at some point, but I say it every time. I appreciate you, man. Thank you. Yeah.
For example, me, like, I'm just kind of curious, like more about this security stuff, you know? Like how you're saying that you can use this technology to protect code or anything like that. But like, how else do you incorporate security into like the blockchain? Like, what other use cases do you use it at?
That's a good question, Hellos. I'm trying to blockchain specifically. I might just not be. Maybe I'm just not. Kind of coming up with a. Like not a writer's block, but like a thinking block right now. Go ahead.
That's all right. Are you meaning when you say that, like, because it can be used for anything, file encryption, store of like encrypting a whole hard drive or encrypting pieces of information inside other information. It's quite remarkable what you can actually do with encryption setups. I'm actually really happy I dropped in on your space, because I'm actually trying to work out building an SSI, self-sovereign identity. And nice. I need an encryption method for that. I'm not the dev. I'm not doing any of this, but I'm going to work out an encryption method for a certificate set that I need for this. And I'm trying to work out what's going to be like the best methodology for encrypting this file. And it's, yeah. I don't want to give away detail because it is something very early days that I'm building, but it's basically just like an information, a plain document pretty much, but it needs to be incredibly highly encrypted so that it is unbreakable.
For sure. Yeah, well, if I had I would say that in the security space, the two most popular ones are going to be like RSA 4096 or above, and above I mean is higher than 4096, like more bits, or ED25519. Coincidentally, Cardano does use ED25519, right? Like I've said, but a lot of things use that, right? Like for instance, in the server administrator world, ED25519 is probably the most commonly used one now because of the security and speed benefits for SSHing. Right. Or what was my other example? And not to get too technical, but, you know, when you have it, when you see other teams, they say, hey, I have an API that other people can use, like JPG store or whoever has an API that you can is publicly available or you subscribe to it or whatever. Typically, what they're doing is they're using something called a JWT token, right? For that, you have a token for your key, and then what they're doing is they're encrypting that token with ED25519, right? That's another great example where that's a commonly used encryption algorithm. So that's probably a decent one. That's probably, you know, a good one that you might want to, you know, use for that purpose, right?
Okay. No, thank you. Because, like, I'm trying to work out a very in-depth and secure way of linking information without linking it. And, of course, encryption on a very simplified document would be a perfect way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, if you get down to a specific point to where you need a little more focused guidance, you can reach out to me, Kiwi. Just let me know.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad you hopped in, too. I see you around a lot. I'm not sure if I've ever had the chance to talk to you, but yeah. Hey, Gold, I see. Did you put your hand up, or is that by accident?
Yes, I was just noticing that Data Hippo popped in down there. Thank you for joining us, Data Hippo. You know, he's with Zerberus, and so he's kind of doing a little bit of the other side of security for us as well. He's trying to crunch all that data and find all the rug pulls and do all the good things that we need. So I just wanted to point him out down there and throw him some flowers.
Heck yeah, man, I appreciate that. I had someone from, I forget who it was, from Zerberus a couple of weeks ago in my Twitter space too, and I had a super wonderful conversation with him. But Data Hippo, I just invited you up if you want to hop up and let me approve you here. There you go. Data Hippo, it wasn't you that I spoke with from Zerberus, was it? It must have been the other person. But
did you say you cut out for like the 30 seconds there, so when I was coming up to speaker?
Oh. Yeah, no. I was saying actually, it's kind of cool because a couple of weeks ago, another person from Zerberus was in the Twitter space with me, and I had a wonderful hour-long conversation with him. I forget exactly who it was now.
If it wasn't me, if it wasn't my voice, then it was Simon Peters, the CEO.
Simon, that's right. Yep.
Yep.
Anyway, well, cool, man. Well, thanks for hopping up. Can you tell us about Zerberus? I think it's a really cool project. So.
Yeah, of course. First of all, thanks for having me. Thanks for calling me in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What we're doing is we're doing risk scores and data analysis on the blockchain itself, and we're using explicitly only mathematical approaches and only like things like encryptions and stuff like that to reach our scoring methods itself. Sorry, I'm just kind of, we're like really like in a deep development stage right now, so I'm kind of, my mind's like super focused on what we're doing. Maybe I don't know. Do you have questions?
Well, if you had to put it in a very simple layman's sentence or two, how would you describe it?
Basically, what happened was, maybe it's best just to give history. During the 2008 financial crisis, there was basically the whole financial crisis happened because the rating agencies were rating assets above their risk score. So they were giving these housing loans a AAA score when they were actually like really, really bad loans. So what happened was basically the bias and the manipulation in these credit companies came about and caused the financial crisis. And what Xerberus is trying to do is we're trying to give a alternative to financial rating agencies in a bias free and like provable way. So using only mathematics and then doing it and then getting answers through a bias free way by basically using a DAO or like querying the community, if you will.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm excited about y'all's project. I think I checked it out a couple of weeks ago when Simon was on here, and I think you guys are still working out a lot of different things on it, but looking forward to it for sure.
We're just about to release our MVP and a first look into what we're going to be doing and stuff like that. And a really handy part that comes along with all of our risk rating agency part of our company is we also have really, really, really expressive data, like blockchain analysis tools. So like chain analysis or Nansen, we have a whole bunch of tools that are like that we want to release to the community so that everybody can do their own research.
You know, and to that last word you just said, you know, I think you know, one of my favorite things about Zerberus and a lot of projects like you, because there are quite a few things, even in the Cardano space, that you can use along with Zerberus to do your own research. You know, the thing I would say is you hear a lot of people saying all of the time consistently, you know, some Bob asks, you know, brings up a question and they say, well, go do your own research. Well, if Bob doesn't know where to start, or doesn't have the knowledge, well, then how do you expect that person to be able to effectively do their own research, right? So tools like Zerberus or ScatDAO or whatever, right? There's a lot of things out there. with these tools, you're enabling people to better, more effectively do their own research, right? You're giving them the things that they aren't able to, come up with their own because, lack of knowledge, lack of skill, lack of know-how, so forth, right?
Yeah, precisely. Excellent. There's like other excellent projects that are doing things like us, like CRCI, AuditDAO, CNFT Jungle, TapTools, and there's so many tools. And I think it's really important that people use as many tools as possible, and that all these tools kind of use each other, and we kind of do our own independent research and specialize in certain things. So, like at Zirbius, we're really, really specializing, and we're really focusing on-chain analysis itself. So, for example, ScatDAO, they very much focus on like the Twitter side, like how many bots does the project have? What does the team look like? And like that's a very important aspect of doing your
Yeah,
research,
the
and really
human
helped
research
with
part
that.
of it, yeah.
Yeah, precisely. And then we and then, like the only real way that you can do on-chain analysis right now that's available is by like looking at like CXplorer or Cardano Scan, which are basically just reskins of raw blockchain data, and it's not built in a way that's meant for looking into the data like we want to look into it, like the whole community wants to find wash traders or find if teams are selling and things like that. So what we're trying to do is we're really trying to focus on giving the on-chain blockchain information in a way that's like human readable, if you will.
I
So
mean,
you guys are.
that's a very good way to put it. How a lot of these things out there are really just reskins of raw data, where they really don't ha help the average Joe out there because they don't know how to analyze that, right, or understand it, right? So, tools like you take that information, interpret it, and give these people something usable, right?
Yeah, like for example, like if you ever wanted to like look up the transaction history of a certain wallet, following a certain token, like if you want to see like, okay, I want to see the treasury wallet for World Mobile, for example, or something like that. There's no real tooling right now that's available to you to look at the ledger version of that wallet and when they bought their tokens and how they bought them and the transaction histories for that specific token. What you'd have to do on Cardano Scan is you'd have to scan through all their transactions, the ones that are ADA, the ones that are not affiliated with World Mobile, and you'd have to like parse out the World Mobile specific transactions. And then from there you can get that information, but that's very hard to do, and especially if you like don't have like your own personal blockchain query.
Absolutely. Not to get off track or anything, but Data Hippo, maybe if you and Simon are interested in it, I just did. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with what I am doing, right? But I have a Catalyst funded project where I'm providing cybersecurity support to individuals, teams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? From in different capacities, whether it's working with the team on a weekly basis or a Twitter space or doing a YouTube video, et cetera. So that's the shortest way I can preface what I'm doing with my question about, I just did a video with Copper Seed Safe, and I'm interested in doing more videos with people that are providing security value related things to the community. So if you guys are interested, I would really like to talk to you about setting up a video to talk about what you do.
Yeah, we'd love to. We would be honored to be a guest on your show. We appreciate
Awesome,
that a
man.
lot.
Well, I will. What's the best way to reach out to you? Just a Twitter message or somewhere else,
Yeah,
or?
we watch our DMs. You can DM me
All
here,
right.
or you can DM the actual Xerbius account, whichever you prefer.
Okay, I'll reach out to you in the morning. Cool.
Yeah,
Awesome.
no problem. Sweet.
I'll tack on. I like what you're doing too with the Serbia thing, because I mean, if anyone new comes to blockchain and opens a transaction explorer, counter scan, e-scan, whatever, it's instant headache. They don't know what they're looking at, how to figure out stuff, unless you've got some background in tech to sort of guide you through understanding even the basics of it. People just look at that shit and go, yeah, no, nah, and close the window. It's no point to anyone who doesn't have some sort of footing. So yeah, tools like that are very, very necessary. Absolutely cool.
Yeah, precisely. We're trying to remove that abstraction and give the end user something much, much more closer to like a bank statement per wallet, and then some other extra investigation tools that are very focused on investigation itself.
Yeah, I like how you know, like some of these explorers, you can filter a little bit, but I mean, unless you export all that over to a spreadsheet and you've got all your formulas and all that stuff, and what you guys are doing is you're kind of finding those, you know, second, third level derivatives, I guess if you want to say that, in the data, and then you're finding like signatures in that data, right? So you can parse it out, and when you figure out that, oh shit, it's happening again over here, so now you know what a rug pull looked like over there, and you can spot it over here in the data, right? And like deep in the data in the math, right? So this is pretty cool.
Yeah, so this touches a little bit like of how our risk model itself works. Basically, what we're doing is we've been talking a little bit about this chain analysis and being able to search through wallets and stuff like that. What our risk score is built upon that. So basically, we scan all wallets all the time for all tokens, like basically all of everything, and then from there we basically watch the change in the network over time. So we like see the certain amount of blockchain transactions within a week, and we calculate what that looks like, and then we look at what the same blockchain looks like a week later, and then we look at the differences between the two. And what we can do is we can basically really clearly express and algebraically express or express with mathematical terms what it is, what happens on the blockchain when a rug pull happens, or what happens on the blockchain when a large amount of the team sells, or what happens on the blockchain when you have like a lot of wash trading in a project for like NFT projects. And then we can really like, we can classify these things mathematically. And then with that classification, we can use machine learning or AI to scan for that in other tokens. So we can get a little bit of a predictive measure when it comes to rug pulls and things like that.
So your product, even though it's kind of a security product, it could also be used for like trading bots, right? They could see these signals in the chain and know that something's brewing over here, right? And they could run that way and go trade over there. Is that a practical application?
Yeah, absolutely. We ran a poll the other day actually on our main account, and we asked what people will be using Exerbius for more: trading activity and trying to use like leverage our data analysis to get better trades, or if they're going to use it for security measures. And it was like pretty much an even split, 46-54 or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but it was like split right down the middle of people using it for this and some people using it for that. So it's cool that we have these like these two customers we can really reach out to.
I'm also very happy that security part of it wasn't completely blown out of the water by the trading part. At least it held its own.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think that's because the whole idea of Exerbius really was birthed out of wanting to make a better ecosystem and self-regulate the ecosystem itself. And I personally am a serial mathematician / statistics. I'm only interested in being able to classify these blockchain information in mathematics. That's what I'm interested in, right? So all this financial stuff and the degenning things and stuff like that, I don't know anything about that. And I'm like so not interested in that kind of stuff. So that's kind of also the reason why we haven't like looked so much in the trading side, is because we're much, much more interested, us personally, in the security side.
That's great to hear. Yeah. I every time I see someone that's helping in the security area, it gets me really excited, because look, I mean, everybody wants, you know, everybody's worried about trading or worried about drama or worried about this or that. And, you know, every time I see it, you know, a part of me gets a little disheartened because I'm like, what about security? You know, but yeah,
Yeah, I think also like and hats off to you as well, because you're doing this with your Catalyst project and stuff like that. But like, everybody wants security, and everybody's like claiming that blockchains are such secure systems and blah blah blah. But nobody's actually willing to do the effort to get that security. And nobody's everybody says we hate how many rug pulls are on our ecosystem and all these types of things. But nobody's willing to either accept regulation from the government or build it themselves. So hopefully, like we as Exerbius, we want to come in and we want to be able to generate a way that the community can come up with a self-regulation that we can then avoid rug pulls and things like that.
And I feel like your data could also be used in risk appraisal. And we don't have any insurance protocols on Cardano yet, but I think that when they do finally bubble to the top and we have some insurance protocols on chain, I think that they'll be reaching out to you guys and using your data to parse that risk, you know. I don't know. I'm just kind of riffing here, but I think that you're going to be like a necessity for that type of that type of a protocol as well.
Yeah, we've already had a lending protocol, a ReoFi project, and a NFT ecosystem builder all reach out to us for that explicit reason.
Awesome. Yeah, hey, I saw a couple of people hop up, Ada Street and Ale. If y'all have any questions or anything, you're welcome to request speaker and hop up. But yeah, also, and just for the new people that did join, I am talking on my EpochSec account here, but if you're interested in hearing more about anybody from here, follow them or me, check out my Holy Macaroni account. I'm in here on that account as well. But yeah, man, yeah, thanks for all that. Data Hippo, I really appreciate that. The other thing I wanted to mention that is completely separate from anything that we've talked about so far, I mentioned it kind of in the very beginning, but I'll talk about it again since I have a few people in here, is I recently saw a lot of news about out there about how Twitter is allowing people that are paying for their paid subscription for the Twitter Blue account, they're allowing them now to use SMS or text messages for two-factor authentication. And I wanted to kind of clear the air on two points around that, because I think a lot of people see that and they're like, oh, now, you know, if I pay Twitter $8 a month or $11 a month, I can get two-factor authentication. There's two misunderstandings there. For one, you can already two-factor authentication on Twitter. You can use a software authenticator like Google Authenticator, or you can use a hardware device. I think you can use YubiKey with it, which is, you know, a hardware authenticator. The second thing is, don't just pay for Twitter Blue if you want to use SMS two-factor authentication, because that is arguably less secure, or I guess less valued, right? You can make it more secure, like if you enable SIM locking on your phone, right? Because the thing is, if you have two-factor authentication for it using text messages, right, and you don't have SIM lock, for example, there's an attack vector out there for bad actors. What they'll try to do is they'll get a SIM card, and if they get enough information about you, they'll try to socially engineer your service provider, AT&T, Verizon, whoever it is, to activate that SIM card. If they can get that to happen, then they start receiving your SMSs, right? So, and phone calls and so forth. So then they can actually gain access to your SMS authentication that way, right? But completely separate topic, but another thing I saw going around the last couple of days I wanted to bring up. Did somebody have their hand up? I think I saw a hand up, but did I just bore everybody with that?
I may have raised my hand, my mistake. I'm sorry. I'm trying to walk around with my phone and do all kinds of chores here at the house. Sorry.
I hear you. I'm doing that too. But yeah, I hope that helped somebody clear that up for if anybody saw that going around. But yeah, well, I got a few minutes left. I don't know if anybody on here has anything else to bring up.
I just want to say thank you for creating an enlightening space, and it's nice to see a little bit of a crowd in here today.
Yeah, thank you, man. I'm happy to see the crowd too. It's awesome, you know. It's arguably my fault because I'm. You know, it's really tricky, you know, for one, just spreading the word about anything you create, but getting Twitter spaces and the word for them spread is without being, you know, using propaganda and stuff, it's really tricky spreading that, because there's so many Twitter spaces out there and people are always so very creative about how they title them and stuff like that, right? But
I told you, man, you got to put UFOs in the title.
I'm gonna do it next week, man. I'm definitely doing it. I put Cardano upgrade in there this time, and I got a few people to join off of that, so that worked. Hey, hellos, you got your hand up? What's up?
No, well, I just wanted to say, like, just pretty cool, man. Like, it's always nice to just hop in spaces and see, like, what people are doing, like. Like how you're saying that not many people care about the cybersecurity and all that stuff. People just want to degen and all that. But for example, for me, since I'm just like a collector and all that, like, I mean, I know it's not all about like just FOMOing and all that. So it's refreshing to see how people are actually like doing things, building like on the blockchain, any chain in general. Like, it's pretty cool to see like everything that goes behind doors. Like, even though I don't fully understand it, but it's still pretty cool to see that people are like really committed to making this space like safer and just innovating to I guess use these technologies to make everything better, you know?
Oh yeah, Helios, if guys like this didn't exist, like Data Hippo and Epochsec and, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, that are in these spaces, if they weren't really like making sure that this stuff was built right, then a lot of people would lose a lot of money. And then you think that would bring regulation down like crazy, you know? At this point, it's usually just the centralized exchanges that have been screwing people. But if the blockchain's actually, you know, and of course you do have your rogue pools, and it is kind of the wild, wild west out here. But, you know, that's what these kinds of guys are working on. Like, you know, Zerberus over there is building stuff that's helping you spot that. And so, yeah, all of this stuff needs to happen, you know, just to make all of this the future, you know. We need it to be a safe future, you know, dependable. You know, we're putting our money here, so it needs to be really solid.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate those comments, guys. Yeah, yeah. It takes all of us. It takes everybody collectively to do. I mean, it's always really interesting, right? Because people really love the news, the drama. They love DJing and all that, and it's great because I do that too, right? But you know, I'm really a firm believer in people out there doing projects like everybody here. It's, you know, spreading that word and just educating or really badgering in and honing in, you know, these important points does help people out, right? Like, if we help out one or two people at a time, we're winning, right? If we could save one or two people at a time, that's great, right? But yeah, and that's the thing too. Like, like I said, I get in those degen activities and stuff too. I mean, it's exciting, right? But at the end of the day, you know, I like Twitter spaces and videos. Like, you know, I watch YouTube. I listen to YouTube while I'm in the shower, right? But it's always an educational video. It's just the way my mind works, right? always trying to learn something from the time I wake up till the time I go to sleep. So I guess it's a problem. I don't know, but yeah. But yeah, Helios, what I tell people a lot is, you know, if they don't understand the topic, you know, because, you know, what will happen a lot of times is somebody hears a topic like ED25519 encryption algorithm, elliptical curve, like I've said 100 times, right? They'll hear that and say, well, I have no idea what that is, so I'm not going to bother with it. What I tell people is go take one of those terms, look it up, just learn, you know, one little thing about it at a time. And, you know, I do that all the time. Every single time I hear somebody mention something I don't know about, I'll try to take something out of that and go Google it, right? If it's only 5 minutes worth of research, if I pull one little thing out of that, right? That's more than I knew before, right?
Yeah, and I find YouTube's an excellent resource for things like that. There's tons of videos that are really simplified with usually really good graphics to really thoroughly explain very complex, especially computer science problems.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, man. I might be the person that keeps YouTube in business. I'm not sure. I mean, for example, I wouldn't know half the things. I've been learning Linux for the last year and a half, right? Like, that's what I use on a daily basis now. And I wouldn't know all the things I knew if it wasn't for YouTube, right? I mean, it is my go-to knowledge resource, hands down.
Right? Yeah, 100%. Also for me too, is like, I have a degree in physics, but most of the stuff I'm doing in Exerbius is what's called, considered abstract mathematics. So it's a little bit of a different field. And I learned it all 100% exclusively through lectures on YouTube. Like, MIT has like full lecture sets for whole semesters and things like that. There's so much resources on YouTube. It's unreal.
Yeah, you're not kidding, man. It just take one, think of something that you want to know about. Put that, search for that in YouTube. I guarantee there's at least one, if not 100 videos on that topic, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what I use more as my main search engine, YouTube or Google itself, honestly.
You know, it used to be Google for me, but it's probably YouTube now. Because, like, the thing is, I can sit there and read something, all day long, but I guess, you know, what the idea that everybody learns in different ways, right? So I guess I'm more of a visual person. So if I'm watching someone on a YouTube video walking through the thing they're talking about, I personally get more out of it, right? But yeah. Speaking of that, I have a YouTube channel, everybody. I'm not spreading that because I want to become a YouTube sensational person. I'm just putting technical things up there. Like, for instance, I made a video last week about how to SSH and create your keys and all of that stuff to go back and forth between Windows and Linux, or Windows and Windows, or whatever you want to do. So doing things like that. But that's, if you are interested, is if you just go to youtube.com/@epochsec, you'll find it. The logo I have here on my Twitter thing is the same logo I use on YouTube, right? So what's up, Helios?
He also has a link in his profile. If you just click through EpochSec, it's right there.
Oh, I do, yeah. Indeed. Indeed.
So,
yeah.
So I was wondering right now, when you guys were talking about like learning through YouTube and Google and all that, what are you guys' thoughts on like ChatGPT and all that? Like, because a lot of people, I guess, are using it for learning also too. Like, you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think it's really good at writing fiction, or, you know, it generates forms really well. But as far as getting any factual information out of ChatGPT, especially the free version that I've been playing with, you know, that hasn't been connected to the internet in a year. It was programmed a while back, so none of the information on there is current. So if you're asking it to write a book report for you or something like, or, you know, so anything with like current events involved, it's not going to have that information, you know. Now, it probably could write a pretty decent book report, honestly. I've had it writing fiction stories. yeah, it's fun to use that Dan hack. If you haven't Googled that, Google that. Look up the Dan thing, and always put that in, and you'll get some interesting results. So it's fun for like creative writing, or, you know, just being able to kind of put stories together and things like that.
Yeah, I agree with Gold. Yeah, it's like, so there's another thing that, yeah, and to his point, right, it's not been connected to the internet, I think, since 2019 or 20 or something. Yeah, so you're not going to get any real new current information out of it. Also, my best friend was explaining to me something the other day about how it uses predictive text, and I don't fully understand that, but he was basically saying, and I agree with him, right? Like, it's a use case for ChatGPT as well for actual knowledge is like a starting point, right? Because it is going to give you a lot of false information, right? But like, if you're like, I'm talking a lot about encryption algorithms, right? If you type in, what are the encryption algorithms? You know, what are the common encryption algorithms? It's going to tell you RSA and ED25519 and stuff, right? But if you start asking it more questions about that, it's going to get it wrong, right? So it might be an okay starting point, right? But I wouldn't use it as a reliable source of information, right? Hey, Data Hippo, I saw you came off. Were you going to mute? Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to really echo both of you guys are saying. I think it's really, really good for a prompt feature. So, for example, I use it almost exclusively nowadays for prompting me to make SQL queries. So like a specific coding language where I say, okay, make a database query that does XXXX, and then it generates it for me. And then I put that over into the code, and then I slowly edit it and correct the code that the ChatGPT gave me. So it's really, really nice for like prompting things, maybe prompting a book review, but writing the whole thing itself, it can never really do. And also, I just think it's also incredibly, incredibly good at speech predictions and things like that. But it's not, but it really highlights the inherent problems with AI. Like, for example, I'd encourage you to go look up ChatGPT plays chess, for example. It can't play chess whatsoever. And that's something that's very basic. So it's like everybody thinks that ChatGPT is like the world's smartest thing. It's going to take over everything. It's not at all. It's just really, really good at speech prediction, but not good at anything else.
Something that I had a lot of fun with was I got this NFT, and the project wanted me to write like a backstory for this NFT. So I was like, okay. So, you know, I went in and I said, write me a Grimm's fairy tale. And I gave it the character name. I said, about this character who is, you know, the father of a family and da 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 da. So I gave it these details, and then it wrote me a Grimm's fairy tale. And then I went back and said, okay, now rewrite this in the style of Sun Tzu. right? So now it's talking all about the dynasty of these, this hacker family, you know. So you can really throw all these different, like, do this in the style of this, you know, do it in the style of, you know, a poem or whatever, you know, pick your favorite poet, you know, whatever. And so it's fun to play with it in those kinds of ways. That's the way I've been having the most fun with it, honestly.
Sounds pretty fun, man.
I think that's what the, I think that's what it's best at too. I mean, it's just those are different pathways of language, really, and that's what the AI was trained to do. So you're just manipulating those pathways, and that's why it's probably so much fun and so good as well.
You know, I actually tried the other day to use it to see how it would write a script for me. So I try, I asked it to write me a Python script to create, you know, for, specific for APIs, right? To create me a JWT token and encrypt it with RSA. And then I also did it, told it to encrypt it with ED25519. And it told me to use libraries that have been deprecated for like 5 years, you know, libraries Yeah, so I'm like, wow.
I found it to be completely unusable with Python.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it might give you like a starting point to kind of know how to write it a little bit, but it's going to lead you down the wrong path, right?
You have to wonder if they did that on purpose so that it wouldn't rewrite itself, you know?
Yeah, I maybe. Mean,
isn't that machine learning style? Isn't that written in Python? I'm not sure. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass right now.
Everything's written in Python just because it's easier, but then it always gets converted over like in production to something much, much faster, like C or Haskell even.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. Wow.
Mostly C.
Really? Is C still... I didn't even, you know, like I said, my best friend's a developer, but I'm not. I didn't realize C was still so widely used.
So yeah, actually, I'm not a developer either. I'm what's considered like a computational developer. So like, I know how to do really, really complex math, which is machine learning in coding. And it's we use C almost exclusively. Like, it's everyone's favorite language.
How about that? I just learned something new. That's awesome.
But we also use Python as like a, as an initial layer because it's way too hard to code in C. So you just code in Python, you make sure it works, you make sure your model's working, and then once your model's working, then you move it over to C.
Yeah. I use Python because my C++ class in college and then my Plutus Pioneers course both went way over my head when it came to functions and object-oriented stuff and all of that. So that's why I use Python because that other stuff is beyond me, so...
Yeah, object-oriented and functional languaging and functional programming in general is a real barrier to wrap your mind around at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, like, getting the syntax down and, you know, variables and all that stuff, that's easy, right? But yeah, not much else beyond like, that for me. But.
Like, the syntax is consistent through pretty much every language, so like Linux and Python and all the web languages, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, all those types of things, they're all one type of language. So basically just switching from JavaScript into Python to learn it, all you have to really, really honestly learn is just the different syntax. But then you go into functional programming and it's completely different syntax with a completely different method. And it's just, it fucks with your brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I can attest to that for sure. Hey, Terry and, Nostra, I saw y'all hopped in recently. I'm probably not going to have the space going much longer, but I will give y'all an opportunity if you want to hop up. If you had anything to ask or anything, you're welcome to hop up. I don't know if you're just listening in or not, but yeah. Otherwise, yeah, I appreciate you hopping in. Yeah, I think I'm kind of out of topics for now, though. But this has been a very fun conversation. I appreciate everybody hopping in today. And yeah.
Everybody, yeah, please follow EpochSec and help to amplify this security space when you see it pop up. Because he really very rarely has folks in here, and he really needs to be able to spread the message. And you know, hopefully in the future, I'm hoping for him that he'll find a way to make this generate revenue on its own, and he won't have to go to Catalyst every time Catalyst is going on, you know. But, you know, let's support him, and when we do see him in Catalyst, let's vote for him, you know. So these are the people in your neighborhood, so let's all follow each other and you know, get those handshakes on.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Gold. Yeah, I'm terrible at remembering to ask people to do that. I'm not good at the marketing part at all. But thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah, if anybody ever needs any help on here, right? Or if you want to do if you want to work with me on anything, or if you need any support or anything like that, just reach out to me anytime. Again, like Gold mentioned, right? But just to add on, right? My project technically runs until the end of October, but I definitely fully intend on continuing this work after that, whether it's Catalyst or whether I can turn this into something self-sustaining, something that I can maintain on my own without that sort of funding, right? But
yeah, don't forget to DM me so we can have that meeting and then make that video and stuff like that. Because I think also you should talk to Simon about turning your security into a business model. He's like an absolute wizard when it comes to business models and things like that. So maybe you can really make this into something that's actionable and you can do for a living.
I think that's the guy I need to speak with then. Yeah, I will definitely DM you in the morning and about both things, right? So maybe what I'll do is I'll DM you and try to work out a time that we can meet and discuss those two things and then meet a second time to actually do the video together, depending on how busy you guys are and stuff. But yeah,
sounds good. You just DM us and we'll meet up pretty quick. We're all the time working, so we're pretty flexible.
Yeah, I think we all do, right? yeah, for sure. Yeah. That sounds great. All right, well, everybody, I hope you have a great rest of your Sunday. If you're in a Ford time zone, I hope you have a great evening. And I have officially started doing these consistently. At first, I was trying to do these at various times every week, but I think that was difficult to get people involved because it was hard to follow that because there was no consistency. So I'm going to try to do these every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, at least for the next month or two. Maybe after that, I'll rotate it to a different consistent time to help other people in different time zones. But for now, yeah, every Sunday a.m. Eastern time. But yeah, I hope everybody has a good Sunday. I appreciate you and take care.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun.
Sure.
Awesome. Y'all too. I had a good time.